This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast. Broadcasting to the entire world, live and on the spot. Good to be with my listeners now, and let me make a point that you can, in fact, ask me questions on Stormfront Town Hall. Just go to stormfront.org, go to the Town Hall section, and I'll be monitoring the Town Hall section to see for any questions or comments from our listeners around the world. Also, you can write me directly at info44@davidduke.com. That's info44davidduke.com. I also want to welcome, I know, listeners out there who I really enjoyed meeting and spending a few days with in the nation of Hungary recently, and that's George Kadar, otherwise known with the somewhat infamous moniker of Kennewick Man. George is a true patriot. He is a true Hungarian who is resisting the control of his country by any foreign forces, whether it be Zionism, whether it was the Bolshevik government under the former Soviet Empire of Russia, or whether it be the neocon-controlled American government. And it's really important to know, it's vital to understand, that I'm not in any way unpatriotic or anti-American. I am a true patriotic American. And because I love my country and I love my heritage, I oppose the present policies of the United States of America. That is the government of our country, which I believe has been captured by these Jewish extremists. And they're literally leading our nation to disaster. They're leading us to disaster in Iraq. They're trying to get us embroiled into a terrible war in Iran. And it's just incredible what's going on. The American people have been lied to. We have a media, basically, that's in the hands of a foreign power. And this is very similar in many ways to what occurred in the nation of Hungary during the last century, during the 20th century, and into the 21st century. Ladies and gentlemen, Hungary has a long story and a terrible story of Jewish extremist activity and behavior that has damaged the Hungarian people. You can go as far back, and in fact, even you can actually go even beyond and before the First World War. But in the waning days of the First World War, Bela Kun, a Jewish Bolshevik, organized a revolution in what was then the area of the nation of Hungary. They proceeded to murder every Hungarian patriot they could lay their hands on. It was a vicious government. Thank God Hungarian freedom fighters finally found the ability and the way to put down the revolt of Bela Kun. And this, of course, a very similar revolt happened in the nation of Russia. It's just amazing when I talk to people about the history of communism, and the ignorance of people on this critical issue is just never fails to shock me. And I, at one time in my life, I must confess, was extremely ignorant on the entire subject of communism. Oh, I thought I understood it. I read Karl Marx, both his Das Kapital, and also some other works of his and Engels. I had read many different aspects of the study of communism, both pro and anti, and I was very anti-communist. But as a young man, I had no knowledge of the fact that there was, in fact, an ethnic orientation, an ethnic nature to the communist revolution. And indeed, there was. The first Bolshevik government, as you can read in my book, Jewish Supremacism, was overwhelmingly dominated by people of Jewish descent. The Jewish group, the group that works together more for their own interests, their own agenda, that is more organized politically, economically, socially, and religiously than any other group on the face of the earth, the Jewish group. Well, they literally took over Russia. It was the outgrowth of a very long process. They hated the Tsar. They saw the Russian people as very, very anti-Jewish, what they call anti-Semitic. That's the lexicon we use today, which is a very common word in our language. Unfortunately, there's no common usage of the word such as anti-Gentile or anti-Gentilist or anti-Gentilism. There's no common word like that. By the way, the word Gentile comes from the Roman term, the Latin term gen, which was the Roman ruling class, the families, the great Roman patrician families that ruled Rome and created the great Roman civilization. And of course, the Roman civilization is exactly what we base much of Western European civilization, including our republican forms of government and many other aspects of our society. Even Washington, D.C. is in many, many ways modeled after what you find in Athens and what you find in Rome of the Roman civilization. There's much to be admired in Rome, and there's much also to be feared, because Rome had a republic and it also sought to be an empire. In the process of making an empire, it lost the republic. And patrician, which was at one time an hereditary title, because it was inherited from generation to generation, because it was the ruling families of Rome, became very soon an appointed title, a non-hereditary title. Because you see, the patricians, the original Roman families that created the Roman Republic, were gone. And America now is facing a very similar kind of situation, where we have to make a very strong decision of whether we're going to be a republic or whether we're going to be an empire. There is one big difference, though, between what was the Empire of Rome and what is the so-called Empire of the United States. Because even in its darkest days, the Romans were still for Rome. They were Romans that ruled the world. They weren't dedicated and controlled by any other foreign minority or power. At some points in Roman history, and the historian can tell you, there were some foreign influences that had some hold on some of the houses, some of the ruling houses of Rome. But there's no question that Rome was basically, although there were individual agendas of individual Roman citizens and leaders, Rome was a nation based and working for the interest of Rome. Now, some people saw that interest of Rome to be an empire, and some people saw the interest of Rome to be a republic. But the point is, they were all Romans, and they were working for Rome. We have a different situation in the United States of America. We have the people who are working for republic and the people that are working for empire. Interestingly enough, the people who are working for empire today are completely controlled by a very small minority. Now, they're often called neocons or neoconservatives. And interestingly enough, neoconservatives were founded by Jewish Trotskyites. Now, that may sound strange to some of you people listening who don't know the details and the history of the neocon movement in America, but it is absolutely true what I'm saying. The neocons literally were started by Trotskyite communist Jews, and it was a thoroughly Jewish movement. You should read Kevin McDonald's excellent book, an excellent article. In fact, neoconservatism is a Jewish movement, because it is a Jewish movement. It is run by Jewish patriots. It's run by people who are totally devoted to Israel. You know, a very good example of that is a famous Jew who was at one time head of the director, in fact, of national affairs of the largest Jewish group in the United States, which was the American Jewish Committee. His name is Steven Steinlein, and he's one of these prominent neoconservatives today. And he talks about the fact that as a young man for 10 formative years, he went to Jewish summer camp, and he sang Jewish songs and dressed in Jewish uniforms, the uniforms of a foreign country, and saluted a foreign flag, and was taught that Israel was a true homeland, and was taught that Jews were superior, literally superior in intellect and morals to the other peoples, and that Jews could never trust Gentiles. So basically they were taught, and this is admitted again, I can give you the sources, you can find the source in my book, and you can find it directly from the article that Steven Steinlein wrote on immigration, where he makes this confession. Well, these individual neocons are like Steinlein. I mean, they're just completely devoted to the Jewish people, to Israel. And they themselves have led America into this incredible catastrophe of Iraq. The primary orchestrators of the war, of course, were Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, both devoted Jewish extremists, supporters of the Likud party in Israel. And Perle, along with Wurmser and Feith, other main neocons, actually wrote a paper in 1996. While they still worked with the United States government, by the way, they wrote a paper for none other than Benjamin Netanyahu, the very radical Likud leader in Israel, who was president of Israel at that time, or excuse me, prime minister at that time in Israel for that period. And in this paper, they advocate war against Iraq, against Syria, and against Iran. Now, these individuals later were the ones that put in the Iraq war. Now, to do this war, they couldn't get the American people to go off willingly to spend ultimately trillions of dollars, because that's what this war is going to cost us, and oceans of blood of our young men and women. Thousands of our men and women now have been killed, and tens of thousands have been grievously wounded, terrible wounds of blindness or emasculation, loss of limbs, loss of sight. We keep people alive much more, with much more ability and success today than we used to in war, but at the same time we're keeping men alive who are often just vegetables that are going to suffer a lifetime of pain and disfiguration. And we have this war, which is taking a tremendous toll. Well, they weren't going to get America to go fight this war. Of course, they lied to us. They told us that Saddam was a big danger to the United States, that he had weapons of mass destruction. It was all a lie from the beginning. And the reason why they had to make this lie was simply because they wanted this war for Israel. They saw Saddam Hussein with his huge stockpiles of weapons because of the alliance between America and Saddam Hussein for many years against Iran, by the way, at one time. They saw he now as a danger to Israel. The nation they were trying to secure in their paper, and the paper was called A Clean Break, A Strategy for Securing the Realm, that nation was in fact Israel. It wasn't the United States of America. Well, they control American policy today. And they literally control our policies in many other ways than simply Iraq. They are the ones that have orchestrated the incredible immigration policies of the United States of America that are literally a destruction of the very founding elements of the United States of America. The ethnic groups, the European ethnic groups that built the United States, the men and women of England and Ireland and Germany and France and Scandinavian countries, Italy, Spain, of the Eastern nations and of Russia, these individuals, these members of our European heritage that gave us this society. In fact, the founders of our country were even overwhelmingly British and people of British descent. And they gave us the foundations of the United States of America. Well, we're becoming literally a minority in our own country, and we're seeing a tremendous demographic change. A disaster is brewing for America. And it's not the same country that I grew up in as a young man. We were 90% European-American in the middle 60s, and now we're looking at a country that's probably in the 65% range, and we will probably dip below 50% in the next 15 or 20 years in the United States. And that is a magic number, ladies and gentlemen, because when we're a minority, you're going to see a tremendous shift in all the policies and politics of the United States of America. The have-nots, the people who come here as new interlopers in this country, they will be able to take from those who've built wealth and created the greatness of this country, just take it through the ballot box. They can pass any legislation they want, to have any sort of tax rate they want, any sort of repressive laws that they want. If you think you got affirmative action now, I heard Ward Conley the other day tell us how affirmative action was dead. Well, affirmative action, I hate to tell Ward Conley, is alive and kicking. Every major corporation in this country practices affirmative action. Every major governmental body, whether it be state or local or federal or fire department or whatever, is practicing affirmative action. And I believe these affirmative action programs are going to get even tougher upon the Native American people, the European American people, if the present policies continue. So they literally have led this, and as I show in my book, Jewish Supremacism, it's part of their agenda. The way they've operated all over the world is to break down the founding class, the ruling class of a nation, undermine it, cause a conflict between different minority groups, and then mediate in the conflict, kind of divide and conquer strategy. Well, getting back now to the nation of Hungary, that's precisely, you know, what happened in the nation of Hungary. When the Bolsheviks wanted to come in and rule Hungary, they needed basically a ruling class that they could count on. People that were not loyal to the Hungarian people. People that can be administrators for a foreign government. A foreign government at that time was the communist government of Russia. So they found very apt, even though many, many Jews at that time in history were very, very pro-communist, they found a very apt and willing ruling class to rule over the Hungarian people. They found that in the Jewish class. Now, this doesn't mean that every Jew was involved in these processes. There were certainly Jews who were not Bolsheviks, and there were Jews who were not part of the repression of the Hungarian people. But it is accurate to say that there was practically a ruling class, in a true sense, of Hungary and many Eastern European nations that was made up primarily of Jews. David Irving, in his excellent book, Uprising, shows this extremely well. He gives you the names, dates, places, and he points out in his book, Uprising, he says, in fact, that the Revolution of 56 wasn't simply an uprising against Bolshevism. It was an uprising which was, in many ways, quote, anti-Semitic. Of course, that's a word that Jews use to describe any opposition to their control over your country. But he describes it that way because he points out the secret police head that tortured so many thousands and killed so many tens of thousands of Hungarians was, in fact, Jewish, Peter Gabor, that every one of the four ruling junta of Hungary during the time of the repression of the Hungarian revolt, what brave and wonderful men the Hungarians were. And by the way, George, I think George is listening to the program by now. And again, anybody who has any questions, any comments, you can reach me now live on Stormfront. Just go to Stormfront Town Hall and post your questions, or you can also write me directly at info44@davidduke.com, and I'll be happy to answer your questions for a little while more on this program tonight. It won't be that long of a show. I've got a heck of a schedule. I don't think I've ever been more busy in my life than over the last few weeks and months. And you can hear it in my voice. I've been talking so much and working so hard. I think I've had kind of a hoarse voice for about the last few weeks. I've got to go to some other major events in Europe over the next few days. I'll be doing a lot of driving, a lot of speaking, and a lot of meeting with some major people. And we're going to have some great reports, I think, for that for you over the next few days. I want to tell you also, and I want to take this opportunity in this live program to tell you that I'm so, so very thankful for the wonderful welcome that I received in the nation of Hungary. And George was a tremendous asset in that country, as was Tibor Geda. Tibor Geda is the publisher who did so much, so many great things to get great books published in Hungary. And proportionally, I can tell you that they have more books published on these patriotic subjects in Hungary than almost any other nation, and more are sold. My book in Hungary is already a bestseller by Hungarian standards in 1 week. So I just can tell you that it's just tremendous, the work that they've done in that country. And by the way, George spent a lot of time in the United States, and he knows many of the very best and the most famous leaders of our movement around the United States of America. And now he's back in his native Hungary, and he's just doing a great job over there, and I'm really glad that he's working so hard, and I'm so pleased again with Tibor Geda and his brother Shandos. His brother, by the way, is a blind man. Now it's hard to believe that, and it's hard to really understand that when you realize he's the publisher, one of the major publishers of a country, and the man is blind. Now that shows you. When I spent some time with this gentleman, you know, I really realized a couple things. One is that you can do a lot of things even if you are blind, because I've always kind of thought man, if I was blind, I couldn't do anything in life. But more importantly, I realized that I have no right to complain. When my work day is too hard, or when I'm feeling a little ill with a cold or flu, and like I'm going to cough right now if I'm not careful, when I feel a little wary, my gosh, I'm so lucky. We are all so lucky. Many of us listening, not all of us, in fact, some of us listening might not have all our facilities, but all our abilities and all of our senses. But those of us who do, we have so much opportunity. I often hear the people in our movement complaining, and it's true. I mean, there's so much in our world to be upset about. I get very upset to see our boys dying in Iraq for these Jewish extremists, and to see that the evil that's been done to the nation of Iraq and also, of course, to our own country. I realize that they're not only destroying the heritage of my own country, but they're also now trying to infect through the government of America, the control government. They're trying to infect the rest of the world with this multiculturalism and globalism and destructive of our way of life. And so I see many, many things that hurt my soul and hurt my heart. And sometimes when I read about some particular terrible action against our people, our people being victims, or simply our people losing the will to survive, it affects me very, very strongly. But there's also, ladies and gentlemen, so much beauty in the world. And there are still men and women on this planet of our heritage who are brave and courageous and honorable. And there's men who've sacrificed their lives and women who've sacrificed their lives for our freedom throughout the history of our people. And they're alive right now. And there's men and women every day just struggling to keep their families together and keep bread on their table and to live a decent and good life. And there's men and women across of Europe who recognize the truth. I see them every day. I meet them. We have such a responsibility, all of us listening, all of the people who are aware of what's going on in the world, we have such a responsibility to stand up and to act for these men and women. Even if we feel bad ourselves, there are so many people who have not given up, and I've not given up. I believe, in fact, we're winning the battle in a real sense. We can't see it yet, but there's so much changing and turning opinion in the world. I'm just kind of amazed about how I see in my travels, both the United States and elsewhere around the world, how much different the political climate is today than just 5 years ago or 10 years ago. Kennewick Man, George can tell you that 10 years ago, the patriotic movement in Hungary was just a splinter of the oak tree that it is today. I mean, they had literally hundreds of thousands of people in the streets over the last few weeks standing up, who were basically people of our persuasion, of our values. And when I see the beauty of nature that we're still all allowed and capable of enjoying, the beauty of the sun rising over a snow-capped mountain, or simply the feel of cool rain on our faces as we climb or as we walk or while we work or we exert ourselves, or the feel of water around us while we swim, and the feel of our muscles and our blood circulating, and feeling the breath of life as we come and take each breath, as we throw our hands and our arms and legs through the water and make resistance and make ourselves move with speed and determination. There's so many things. There's so many beautiful people around us, and so many of us are lucky to have people that we love and we care about. And just the idea of looking into the beautiful eyes of the one that we love and being able to touch and share that beauty and perhaps even make new beauty. And boy, our people really need to have some children if we're going to survive. I feel not just for the European people, but for all peoples. I feel, because I've studied so long about it, I feel for the Palestinian people and what they've suffered under Jewish supremacism. And I realize a lot of things over the last few years that America, and truly the white race, we don't need to suppress anybody or oppress anyone. We are not supremacists and even not colonialists in a current sense. I'm opposed to those people who say, "Oh, we need to take over the world." That sounds to me like the Jewish supremacists. You know, we have the ability with Europe and America and with our brains and with our spirit, we have the ability literally to go across the entire universe. And we have the ability to make our own nations strong and vital, no matter how small we are, no matter how big we are. And I think of the next few days and weeks and months and years, we have to begin to unite, because a worldwide movement is going on right now for our people. And when you think about Europe together with Russia, Russia, the richest nation on earth, a vast nation, many times the size of Europe, bigger than the United States, and you think about the United States and Canada combined, that's all the resources and all the land area we need for the white race to go to the universe, to the stars. And we're going to have such tremendous medical and social and scientific and technological breakthroughs. And we're having breakthroughs in genetics every day, too. And we're understanding more about those things. We have the ability, ladies and gentlemen, to literally go to the ends of the universe. It's coming. It's like the beat of history is speeding and quickening and deepening. And we now realize, we can see now a vision, a horizon that we could never see before. It's like we stand, they often say that the great men of history stand on the shoulders of giants. And we can now stand and we can see. We have just one problem, and that's our survival. And if we don't secure our survival, and we don't secure our survival quickly and rapidly and intelligently, if we don't do that, then we're never going to fulfill that vision. But we all must be inspired. We must be encouraged by what we can see. I've already got some interesting. This is a live show. We're on live right now. I'm broadcasting to you from Europe. I just recently, in the last few days, came from the nation of Hungary, and we had a great trip there. And I know that Kennewick Man George is also on Stormfront. If you have any questions, go to stormfront.org, the town hall section, or you can also go to davidduke.com and go to info 44, and you can ask me a direct question through the email like that. And I've got some coming in right now, and I'm just going to go to that for a few minutes before we call it a day today. As you can tell by my voice, I've been having a heck of a schedule and reaching an awful lot of people. I wanted to find, and see if I can find it here, a letter from let's see, where can I find it? I'm going to look for it and see if I can find it. Sorry to do this while I'm on the air with you, but this is the first live show I've done in a while. I have been taping them, and I just want to see if I can find this letter from Hungary, which was a really interesting letter, and I want to share it with you if I can, if I can find it. I got so much stuff here. I'm getting so many letters and so many really positive responses from around the world. I'm really pleased with it all. Just a second. Yes, okay, let's see here. This is a letter right now, in fact, from Jolan, which is from, this is a different one, but he says, "Dear Professor Duke, a little comment in the last part of your excellent book. I remember I read George Washington himself, "A nation which allows the Jews into its ranks will wake up one day that its society will grow corrupt and be on the decline." Oh, well, he says, excuse me if not accurate in my recital, but it was long ago when I read this when I was in college, but I found it was important to you. And let me see. That's definitely the person. Let me see if I can find this comment. A lot of stuff here. Let's see. I'm sorry about looking at this. Okay, here's an interesting letter from Yolanda Gaspar, who is from Hungary. And it's a kind of interesting letter, and she's apparently, she got my book when I was in Hungary. She's reading it, and I'll share this letter directly with you. Dear Professor Duke, it's hard to write to you so earnestly, as I feel that you must be around my age. I was born in 56, and your approach to things that surround us here in the 20th and 21st century resembles my generation's thinking here in Hungary. In fact, I like your approach a lot because it's honest and without prejudice, and you are able to revise your views which not many people can do. Besides, I enjoy your humor a lot through your book, Jewish Supremacism. You're brave. You face things not everybody can or dare to face. And moreover, you go to the roots of the problems to see the truth. I do not like to be afraid, though. In this part of the world, even today, it's an everyday phenomenon to fear the unknown. You light the unknown darkness for us. Your lecture at the Megyorik Haza, House of Hungarians, is great. I heard it from my computer, as unfortunately I was not there. I like to listen to people who are clever and are also generous. That is, they do not keep their wisdom to themselves, but share it with their fellow humans. And you have a kindness in your character, which raises confidence and sympathy in the audience. I could listen to nothing but your lecture, and I have the same experience with a terrific and powerful book. I haven't read such a good book for ages. Thank you very much for this. I'm also grateful to you because I'm not so afraid as I used to be. I even laughed at my earlier fears. Reading your book and seeing your brave approach, I learned that it's not the money and not the rank that makes people great and grand, but the intellectual power and perhaps the inherited nobleness that comes through their speech and their writing. It was nice to see you personally. It's something I will tell to my grandchildren, if I will have any, because I think that you are not less than my great hero, Sir William Wallace, whom I know from my historical studies, but better from the film Braveheart. Then I learned also that real great men are those who sacrifice themselves for their friends, as Jesus did, as the kids in the street did in 56 in Budapest, not thinking twice when they stopped the great Russian tanks many times, falling victim to the weapons and the tanks that ran over them. My mother could see a little girl and his brother, the girl age 11, the boy holding her hand being 6, shot by the Russians, the girl having had a great scar on her breast over her heart, and the passerbys laid white flowers on her. Thanks to God, I haven't yet finished your book. I'm hardly waiting to continue reading as it gives me the power to go on, and I hope that it's worth to fight for freedom. Goodbye for now. That's from Yolanda. And that's the kind of, that's just some of the response that we've been getting. And it's something that really encourages me, obviously. And I just can't tell you how thrilling it is until you get a letter like that in your life. You just have no idea of how encouraging such a letter is. And sometimes it's very, very hard to do what I do. Somebody asked me, George was saying today, why do you even go on these shows or take these interviews from some of these Jews? They're just going to savage you. And you can read and listen to the interview I did with the Jew Pele Janos, which is on my website. And the article he wrote was very, very savage. He didn't act too savage in the interview. He certainly didn't report what I said. He didn't try to give the people of Hungary an idea of what I said. He simply went and attacked me very, very viciously. And the people say, why do you do that? Why do you subject yourself to it? And let me tell you something. I don't enjoy doing that. I enjoy sometimes going on a live program, as I did with Fredericus, and then basically beating them. That's the only time you have a fair shot is when they do live, because they can simply not run the tape if you tape a tape. And, of course, when you do an interview on newspapers, 9 out of 10 will be so biased, it's unbelievable. But you have to take that 10, and sometimes it's just the publicity. At least gets people thinking and reading your book for one reason or another, just because they find it interesting. And but he said, well, why do you do these interviews? And I said, well, it's a sacrifice that I got to make for my people. I don't like being attacked. I don't like being viciously attacked, and that there's all these rumors and different things they say about me. I hate that. I despise it. And sometimes it hurts very bad when terrible lies are said about you, especially sometimes when friends that should know better might believe it simply because they hear so much and they don't know what to believe. But ladies and gentlemen, it's the price. It's the price that a man like me must pay to do my job, to reach as many people as I can. And if I just reach one person out there by doing those interviews, no matter if it does hurt me and disgusts me, then it's worthwhile. This is a letter from Copperhead. He says, David Duke, you're my hero. Well, thanks, Copperhead. I've been a follower since I was 15. I'm 19 now. I see you as sort of second father. My question is, have you ever been to Bulgaria? I never heard any news from this country. Are they in the same state as Hungary? Well, Copper, they're definitely in the same state. They're similar state to Hungary. I do have a number of Bulgarian friends in the movement, and we are everywhere. My book now is in Bulgarian, believe it or not. At least the two sections of my book, My Awakenings, are already in the Bulgarian language. And so Bulgaria is coming along, and people are waking up there just as they all over Europe. I don't know why you ask. Maybe you're from Bulgaria, but you can make a comment and write me again if you want to on Stormfront, and we can take a look at it. And here's one from George Kadar, my good friend. Hello, Dr. Duke. Thank you for directing the spotlight on the sufferings of this small nation, Hungary. For spending 35 years in the United States, I have difficulty sometimes to decide if I'm a Hungarian or an American. Therefore, recently I just classified myself a white man. You're doing excellent work in showing to your listeners that our problems are closely related and often overlapping. While we were struggling for a breath of free air, real hard in this country in the last 2 months, I heard it from others as well. There is no way we can free ourselves from our parasitical oppressors and become an independent island in the white world, or whatever is left of that at this time. We are fighting an interlocking, overlapping set of problems against the very same enemies from Kamchatka to San Diego, from Vancouver to Buenos Aires, and we better do a good work. Well, that is really well said, George, and I would be typical of you because you're a very well-spoken individual, a little bit radical at times, but my God, you're a very good friend. And I really enjoyed spending time with you, and I look to spend more time with you and your lovely wife. You've got a great family going there, and I just wish you the very best. And as far as what you're saying, it's absolutely true. This is an interlocking fight. We have got to, without any question, even though we have individual national identities, we believe in nationalism rather than internationalism. We believe in preserving individual cultures. We're opposed to this globalism and this destruction of our individual identities. At the same time, we recognize that we kind of have to fight internationally. It's almost kind of a self-contradictory thing. We've got to fight internationally to preserve our nationalism, because the enemy is on a worldwide basis, and as long as he can align other countries for his purposes, just as they subvert, these Jewish extremists subvert so many nations' policies to their interests, we have to break that subversion in many countries simultaneously. And that's one thing I'm encouraged about. We have a tremendous amount of growth in just about every nation of the European world. So we have a real chance to break through, not just in Hungary, but in many countries simultaneously. I do think in the next decade or so, within the next decade or two decades, maybe at the latest, there'll be a couple nations that will openly break through. And we're going to have to have a big task in not allowing the Jewish extremists to start a war against that country. But we've learned a lot through history, and I think we can avoid war if we do things the right way. But when that nation breaks through, it'll have to use tremendous amounts of its resources to support the movement around the world for our truth and for our freedom. By the way, one of the interesting things about the interview that George sat with me, George sat with me with the interview in the Budapest restaurant, which I have on my website right now. And during the course of the interview, he asked me, Willie, what I would believe. And in fact, I started talking about how I believed in freedom of speech. And he said, yes, but freedom of speech could be abused. I mean, look how freedom of speech, people were allowed to talk about Jews, and this turned into the Holocaust. And look what happened in Hungary, that thousands of Jews were killed and so forth. And I answered him, and I said to him that, let's talk about freedom of speech. He said, I'm for two reasons. I defend freedom of speech. One is I think it's a basic human right. It's a right for people to be able to express their opinions, to express their conscience, to speak their mind. It's one of the most basic of all human rights. It's a right enshrined in the Constitution of the United States of America, in our Bill of Rights. It's enshrined in our Declaration of Independence. It's enshrined in every concept of freedom that the world knows, and it's the basis of all of our freedoms. So first, it's a matter of human rights. And secondly, it's also a matter of truth. Because how do we know the truth on any issue if we can't read both sides and different points of view? We've got to have freedom of speech if we're going to know the truth. And I told him, as far as this, as the Holocaust or the atrocities against Jews. And I said, yes, I believe there were some atrocities against Jews. I also believe there were terrible atrocities against Germans in the Second World War, such as the Germans from Middle Germany and East Prussia, who were dispossessed by the millions. Millions died there. There were atrocities by the Bolsheviks against the Ukrainians. There were atrocities by the Bolsheviks, obviously, against the Hungarians by the hundreds of thousands. There were atrocities against the Russian people by the Bolsheviks. And by the way, most of those atrocities we're speaking about now were actually led by none other than these radical, you know, Jews. That, again, the Jews, the ruling class of communism, which indeed in many ways they were. Now, somebody might not like that fact, or might not like me mentioning that fact, but it's absolutely true. It's correct. It's absolutely correct. And unless we begin to discuss that fact, we're not ever going to know the truth on any other subject. And as long as we're able to control our media and control how we think, the data that comes into our minds on the major issues of the day, as long as that's the case, we're going to be in big trouble in America and around the world. So freedom of speech is important. Now, in the article that he wrote, he didn't really talk about that freedom of speech issue very much. He certainly didn't express it, I think, halfway as eloquently as I did in any way. About these freedoms that are so critical to us. And it's just attack after attack after attack. Nasty, stupid attacks, too, like National Enquirer-style attacks. So, anyway, we're going to go on. We've got from Boy Howdy. He says, what's the current situation in Hungary? Have they recovered from the Jewish interlopers? They're not recovering. They're really just under the thumb. I mean, Hungary is a country where the pay is about a fifth what it is in the rest of Europe. But the prices are almost the same as in the rest of Europe. And how can it be when people are so poor that the prices, for instance, in Budapest are as expensive as many of the most expensive cities of the world? Again, you have a small minority that's basically controlling things in Hungary. And it's still doing it. Another point where we got here. Copperhead again. That's the same one. Okay, we've got another post from my good friend George Kennewick, man. The wave of demonstrators came to a slowdown, mostly because of the cold weather. We still had about 3,000 or 4,000 people last Saturday afternoon at Heroes Plaza in Budapest in demonstrations at over 50 towns across the country. The real thing is that the current municipal elections mirrored how rapidly the country shifted to the right. In a few weeks after we took over the compound of the local Jewish supremacist, the TV building in Budapest, we are basically waiting in happy anticipation for a few encouraging signs from the U.S. and Western Europe, and when we receive those, we'll be glad to put an end to this whole clowning around. Our Judeo-Bolshevik government is hanging on by their miserable existence with the help of 30,000 policemen and their tear gas grenades. They do not really have a bright future in this country. Well, George, I think that you're probably right. I mean, we saw it. I mean, everywhere I traveled with you around the country and with Tiber and the other fine patriots of the country, in those cities, there were actually demonstrations in the city squares on these critical issues to the Hungarian people. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it for my program for today, and I hope you enjoyed it very much. I look forward to being with you again tomorrow. We'll either do it live or we'll do it taped, but I'll work very hard to be with you. I've had a very hectic schedule. I'm getting the David Duke report ready to go right now. And I think you're really going to enjoy that. It's got a full report on the Hungarian tour. It's also got a full report on the efforts against the MAUP, the university I'm affiliated with in Kyiv, and the efforts that the Jews are making around the world to shut down this university. Well, that's going to be going to press shortly, and I'm also going to try to get my Christmas cards out to those people on our mailing list. Thanks a lot, everyone, for everything that you do for me to help me continue this fight. And remember, it is your responsibility to win this battle. You can't look to me and say, David Duke's going to be able to do it. I can't do it. I can't do it without you. I absolutely depend upon your help, your assistance, your tactical and material support. And if you don't if you don't offer that, if you can't give that effectively, I certainly cannot continue my work. So much, thanks so much for being with me, and I'm going to see if I can run up this this file. See if we can get the closing minutes. It's been so long since I've done this this live because I've just not been in a position to do it. But I'm going to run up the file, and I hope to see you again soon. Tomorrow, in fact. Until then, God bless and take care. This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio.